Our experiences have to be tech-enabled, but we understand there are varying adoption levels within that technology. And so ultimately, I don't really know what that means for our event design. Like, I don't know if we've solutioned for that, but it's not binary anymore. Others might be opt-in, opt-out, weaving in and out. They might be like lesser adopters of the technology, but for some, it's going to be mission critical. And I think it's a must-have.
Great events create great brands. But pulling off an event that engages, excites, and connects audiences? Well, that takes a village. And we're that village. My name is Alyssa.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Camille.
And I'm Felicia.
And you're listening to Great Events, the podcast for all event enthusiasts, creators, and innovators in the world of events and marketing.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to season 5 of Great Events. I'm Felicia, and we're kicking things off with one of our favorite traditions, our annual Hot Trends episode, part 2. Last episode, we covered the first 5 trends, so don't forget to check that out. And now we are rolling straight into the next few trends. So let's get going, ladies. We're going to kick off with the era of purposeful event spaces. Now, to define what that means, we know that unique venues have been, you know, getting a lot of love for some time now, especially as we came out of the pandemic. We're like, we don't just want to stick to the venues we necessarily knew before. We want to try some new spaces. But actually, this is a change in that the venues are being selected for much more purpose. If there's a need to be more creative, then people are looking for creative venues. If there's a need to be more collaborative, people are looking for spaces where we can play maybe more games and get together. So there is this real shift from, hey, we just need to be unique and go outside. It's like, you know, when your teacher was like, go outside, it's a hot day. No, it's not that. It's actually, we need to craft it as part of the event experience from day one. I know you got my reference. So what do you think about this?
I think this is awesome because a lot of times your execs are like, what can we do different? We need an activation. We need to think outside the box. And we're like, oh, God. But I think these like unique venues are really coming in to like help here. And they're not new either. They're like, we're doing this for years. What are you talking about? But I do think that like people are, again, back to our podcast last time, I talked about people are protecting their time. But if they see it's at a really cool venue, they're like, oh, I want to check that out. And if you're doing a unique format, they're going to take that back as an experience that they went through with you, right? And it just increases more engagement, I think. I'm excited for this and I want to use more. We just did one event in Denver at Meow Wolf, which is like arguably one of the weirdest, coolest spaces that you could do an event in North America. And it was really cool because we got to like do things differently. And this is not a knock on hotel ballrooms because you can do creative things in those spaces too.
I want to play devil's advocate for that. How easy is it to find and source these types of things, right? Like, I know that not to plug Cvent, but Cvent can help in a number of ways. But I myself find it hard to find the most experiential thing sometimes when I'm doing some of these smaller curated events. So I'm just curious, like, is this something that is emerging? Is this something that's evolving as event creators, event organizers, event marketers try to push the boundaries? Like, what does that sourcing behavior look like?
Well, I was just going to say, locally, from a regional perspective, we have Venue Directory, and Venue Directory have always been very good with that kind of unique venue side of things. So, you know, differentiating how you source, maybe going into the sourcing process saying, what do I need? Do I need to use, you know, Cvent, CSN for this? Or do I need to maybe look into Venue Directory that I know has more of a unique venue listing? So being intentional. And then the only other thing I'd add to that is, like I said at the beginning, knowing why you're doing that in the first place. Like when we sourced Toka Social, we knew what we were trying to create. You know, it wasn't just, I want a random unique venue to host a board meeting. It was, I need people to get networking and come together. So there should be a good strategy behind why you do that. But sorry, go Rach.
I think it also is like, it's evolving to just, you're not just booking the most wacky venue you can find or whatever you want to call it, like, or unique. I shouldn't say wacky, but I think it's more designing the spaces purposefully and bringing the venues into that conversation. So if you're like, hey, I really want to really create a unique networking experience for folks, like even if it's in a ballroom, how do we bring that to life? Whether it's like sensory things, bringing in local things, maybe it's experiential, or you're bringing in unique ways to set up the room. There's just a lot of things that you can bring to that. I mean, I think hotels are also like coming into play here too and saying, hey, we actually have some flexible spaces here or some outdoor options that you can like move this around. This furniture's movable. Like if planners or strategists are coming in and saying, this event is meant to do X. This is the goal of it. And it's not just theater seating in a ballroom. We need some creativity. And maybe that's where like a DMC comes into place too. But I do think that the vendors and venues are expected to become more part of that conversation with the planners to get that business. And that's how it's evolved.
I think that makes sense because if I'm the one organizing the event and I have, as you said, Rachel, the vision, I know what the end goals are. I know that like throughout the agenda or my run of show, like I have specific like goals. And like, as you said, I need at this point, I need my people to be collaborating. And so I need a space that's going to be conducive to that. Or at this point, I really, you know, want everyone to just be paying attention to this incredible keynote that we're going to be delivering. And so we need a space that's for that, or we need to be able to flex in the same space, or we want different spaces because maybe we're segmenting the experience based on, you know, different groups of our audience or attendees. There are so many ways that you might go about prioritizing how to use your space. So I think you as the event organizer need to have your end goals. And I guess I'm curious, Rachel, from what you've seen, like how often do you think people are letting the space inform how the agenda or like the experience actually takes shape? I think in most cases, it's probably like, you know what you want the experience to be, sort of. You have your goals in mind, and then you don't know how to best utilize the space. But I guess I'm curious, like, is there ever a situation that you can think of where you're like, no, I know that there's like this particular venue and that there's some element to that venue that is so core to the central idea for the event or the theme or something that we're going to like actually take this and then like build more of the content and agenda around that. I'm guessing that's probably harder.
It's like chicken or the egg, right, Camille? Like what comes first, like the vision or the objective?
I feel like the vision, the objective.
Like, let's just take a case study. Like if your objective is to get people moving and doing an experience together, then you're going to want a space that provides an experience. So like, for example, if you wanted to go to an F1 venue and you want people to go into the F1 simulator and have that experience, a bonding moment together, you're going to plan your event a little bit around that. Right. But if you want it to be like, I need a flexible space, but it can be at a hotel or a restaurant. A lot of these are restaurants that are being like booked from a cost perspective or whatever. Then you're going to design it based off of what you kind of want to do is like, I think where you're going with this, Camille. I think a lot of planners are driven by the flexibility of the space so that they have the they can change it. Like, hopefully your brief doesn't change, but sometimes you have executives that change it. And sometimes it's great to have that flexibility of saying, oh, this is a flex space. We can do an air wall in the middle of the day and do like experiences on this side and content on this side. Because at the end of the day, you still need content to sell or to get your story across.
Right. I agree. I think, you know, we've spoken a lot about the goals and the whys. And I'm going to use that to move us into our next trend, just in terms of like, why are we bringing this on? So in terms of technology, our next trend is everybody kind of needs to be tech savvy, but tech savvy is being redefined based on the generations. So quite often people, we challenge, why did you purchase the tech? What do you need the tech for? And then people say, you know, well, we're trying to do this thing. So we bought this tech. And then people struggle, quite honestly, traditionally, if you buy tech without a goal, people struggle with it. But now there is obviously AI we spoke about on our last podcast. You kind of have to just get on board. There is no, well, why did we start using ChatGPT? Everybody has to get on board. And we've got five generations all working together side by side. It isn't for young people. It isn't for, you know, millennials. It's for everyone. So tech savvy isn't maybe what it used to be. It's kind of everyone has to just get on board. And what do you think about that? Is that a lot to give people?
It's going to be a huge thing in the workplace in general. Like if you're not upskilled on AI, you're not going to be getting jobs. I've heard some companies are adding that to the recruiting process too. Like a lot of them are either going to test you on it or say, if you don't have some sort of AI knowledge, you're not getting this job. And I think it's kind of smart on the company side. But then there's the people that maybe are in another generation that are scared of it. And like I heard someone the other day say, not at our company, but just someone that I was talking to said, can you just teach me AI? And I was like, nobody knows what AI is. Like, no, there is nobody knows what the hell they're doing with AI. We're all figuring it out together. And I think that's the huge differentiator of this, right?
Rachel, that reminds me. It reminds me of telling my grandmother what the cloud was. What is the cloud? And she was like, so lost, but totally, totally understand this conversation. It's like our experiences have to be tech enabled, but we understand there are varying adoption levels within that technology. And so ultimately, I don't really know what that means for our event design. Like, I don't know if we've solutioned for that, but it's not binary anymore. Felicia, you said five generations. And I was like, okay, so you might only need to satisfy 20%, but that 20%, it is mission critical to have a tech-enabled environment, right? Others might be opt-in, opt-out, weaving in and out. They might be like lesser enable or like lesser adopters of the technology. But for some, it's going to be mission critical. And I think it's a must have now.
If you're worried, like if you're listening to this and you're worried about your job or you're worried about the workplace, Soundings, the company, has a good AI trends report out right now on what companies are looking for, what the trends are going towards. So check that out because it is actually really helpful, like to look at, oh, agentic AI versus just like a ChatGPT response AI. Like you probably need to at least know the differences of that and get like, I know there's not like a ton of trainings out there, but there are like basic trainings you should definitely take and read up on it anywhere. You know what the best thing that you can do? Go ask ChatGPT, what do I need to do in AI to start? And they actually literally, AI will tell you how to use AI.
I tell you, I asked AI the other day to tell me about myself. I said, listen, you've worked with me long enough. Let's have a review. Come on, it's time. And it really told me, it said, you are too in the weeds of what you do. You need to come up and be more strategic. It's like, thank you.
Retweet.
Not being read for filth by ChatGPT. Oh my gosh.
But yeah, like I do feel for people because, you know, we're talking about people that are older than us, people that are younger than us coming in, having to learn. Everybody has to be on a level playing field, I kind of think, you know, to use the apps. If we're putting the apps into people's hands, you have lots of different generations of people attending your events and you're like, hey, download this app, use this app. We have to set a level playing field just for inclusivity, at least, you know, so everyone's together.
I will also say, I think our CEO has talked about this a number of times externally, going to Cvent Connect this past year, in conversations with our customers were acknowledging the lag that they may have had in digitizing their own events and what impact that is now having on their organization's ability to execute and implement AI strategies. So there is this kind of, we're all going to rise together because again, keep pointing back to AI as this big kind of equalizer for all of us, huge shift in business, huge shift societally. And if your organization is lacking on technology adoption, technology integration, data collection by way of events, you're going to be left behind. And so I think one thing that I'm very, very conscientious of in talking with customers is making sure that no one does get left behind. And technology adoption is really how we help support that transition to this future of AI.
I agree. Well, I feel like I've said this before, but I feel like it would be like saying, nope, I'm not going to use the internet. Like, what? I'd be like, okay, that's a strong choice. Are you going to go live off grid too? Like, what's next? So I don't think that it's a nice to have. I think it's a need to have. And I think that if you are not carving out time in your life to learn how to use AI in your role or just learn whatever you can about AI right now, then you are going to get left behind. And if you work in, you know, events or marketing, I think we especially have to be ahead and work to not get left behind. If you're not learning and you work in marketing or events and you're not constantly learning, you're going to become a dinosaur. And I hate to inform you that all the dinosaurs are extinct. So
I want to add one more plug, something I said on the last podcast. So the first trend we dug into, which was AI, I would recommend, and this is coming from the events leader perspective, right? I would recommend that you sit down across generation, across your entire team, maybe even bring in MOPS, maybe like, depends on what your marketing org looks like, and just have a baseline discussion and do it from a lens of what are we doing now? What should we be doing? Where do we want to get eventually? And this is a little bit crystal ball-y because you don't know where things are going, but start somewhere with documentation, like me and Felicia said last episode. Like, just document it. Even if you would give yourself an F rating on AI, I'd be like, wow, we are really bad. When we did this, when we sat down and we said, okay, what are we currently doing? What do we need to do? What are the gaps that will solve time issues, bandwidth issue, whatever? And what are those gaps? And what is our ideal state? We were actually way ahead of where we thought we were. And I was like pleasantly surprised by how far. And yes, we work at a tech company, so I'm at an advantage here, but because we have a lot of great things in our MarTech stack here that we can like dig into and say, oh, they have this, let's try that. But if, even if you're not at a tech company, just look at what you're doing. Look at your, and or meet with your operations folks or the people that purchase technology at your company and say, what things can the technologies that we already own help us do? We're doing that with Slack right now, right? We've met with Slack because we talked to our CIO about how can we integrate Slack more into AI helping our events, because they're looking at that too. And so just, I think if you have those open conversations with your organization and just baseline document it, it'll help a lot. And then that upskills you because you've studied it, you know, and that's bringing it into like kind of the next, what do we need to do?
I love the suggestion of the multi-generational conversation, all parties seated, because I think, and going back to what Camille was talking about, one of the big concerns is this distrust of AI, and not just the taking of the jobs, but that true taking over the universe kind of thing. The fear is very real for some individuals, and you may be listening, right? I was on a webinar and I was noticing the chat, and there was definitely a schism in the chat sentiments, right? Not everyone is ready and able to operationalize AI personally, and some are being pushed to do this organizationally. I think it is very important for leaders of meetings and events to come together in that setting that Rachel just described, and also document, like, what is our code of ethics around AI? What is it that we want to preserve as human? What is it that is untouchable? Certain things that we've talked about, I've hosted a number of AI boardroom conversations that have been around that, the preservation of the human parts, while also embracing that which helps us grow and progresses us with our use of technology. Mm-hmm. But like I said, I don't think we're living in this binary times where it's AI all in and those will get left behind, right? This is about like learning to adapt and evolve and live symbiotically with this thing, and not something that's truly going to take over and not allow it to take over, right? So I think this idea of kind of like your AI meetings and events manifesto is something that can really help us operationalize and not lose that ethos of the power of human.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're essentially talking about tech with tech savviness. I'm going to do a shameless plug to get us into our next trend, but we have technology, and Rachel, you said it, you know, we're a technology company, so we get to use a lot of tech. We have technology for things like sourcing. It's not even, you know, just AI. Our basic sourcing tools are, when I tell people about them, they're like, wow, really amazing. And I'm like, oh man, come on. You know, so for our next trend, we're talking about cost-driving sourcing decisions. And I know that if you're using a good piece of technology, as we've just spoken about, you should be able to source better than if you're kind of just still looking around and going back to old relationships and Googling and things like that. So cost is still driving some sourcing decisions. We spoke about unique events and event design with the venues, but unfortunately, budgets, though, are rising, costs are rising faster. So they are still driving some of those sourcing decisions. And I think that you can achieve both if you source savvy, right? So back to being tech savvy. What do we think about that one, ladies? Are we seeing costs that are still rising? Because I definitely am, from a regional perspective. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
End of conversation.
I can do this one because this is like, keeps me up at night kind of thing here. It's gotten to the point where we need to reevaluate how many events we do because it's so expensive and we can't just keep adding events with the costs rising. And so maybe that's like taking a look at your whole event portfolio and saying, do we combine some things? Because it's that expensive now. And we've shifted a couple event formats to go back to like a restaurant versus a hotel because it is so expensive at these hotels. But I do think there's a way that you can do this through a sourcing platform to just put your cards out on the table. Help me help you. We want to give you business, but you guys are outpricing yourselves. I think if you're honest in that sourcing process in sending your RFP through whatever supplier network on our side or Reposit or, you know, another sourcing platform, I think you can put that in your RFP like, hey, we are cost conscious. How do we work together on that? And I've been really creative with a couple of venues that still want the business, but they don't want to outprice themselves. So thinking about coffee is just like unbelievably expensive. But thinking about like, do we need coffee for 5 hours straight? Or, you know, just little changes that you can make to the event design to help you weigh the costs a little bit. Like we've done an event where, you know, during the content, the bar pauses to save you money. And then I hate pinching pennies because that's what it kind of feels like. And you don't want to do that for your top customers, but you have to almost get creative in those aspects to do it. But I think what you should be doing is if you really are in a bad place with budget, you should be looking at, we just talked about unique venues, you should be looking at unique venues all the way to hotels to see if that will help. And then just putting in your RFP, hey, I need you to be a little constructive with me here or help me design a better cost, or go back to prioritization and say, hey, we actually can't afford all this. Like our event budget is like 50% of our marketing budget. That's a lot compared to the benchmarks that are in the industry of 30%. And some companies don't even get 30%. Some of them get 20. And so if they only have 20% of their marketing budget, they have to be really scientific of which events are going to drive MQLs or engagement or whatever you want to, whatever you're measuring yourselves on. And they have to work that into the things there. And so this is a hot topic with my friends in the industry. They're like, we don't know what we can do next year because costs like food and beverage is so expensive.
Because we can't serve coffee. And I think the other day, audiences aren't necessarily tuned into that, right? Like, I think there's a consumer awareness, but that doesn't necessarily translate when you go to an event, right? It's, there are a lot of behavioral things that we've just come as like table stakes for going to an event. There's going to be coffee the whole time. There will be F&B the whole time. Like, oh, the bar will be open, right? Everything that you've just described. And so there is concern and hesitancy on, are we compromising the audience or the attendee experience when we have to make these cuts? So that is not an easy position to be in. I understand why that's such a hot topic.
It really is. And sometimes we'll look at reports, like there's marketing reports like the IPA Bellwether report, and it will say, you know, budgets are up, event spend is high. And so it looks really positive. But we've seen this over the past couple of years, budgets being higher and event spend being up isn't necessarily a great thing. So when we spoke to the hoteliers and venues about this, and they said they are trying to get better at designing, you know, more flexible packages, just being a part of the design experience so that they are designing for outcomes and pricing for outcomes so that, you know, we're about to move on to our final trend about outcomes. If your venue is helping you to prove the point in the first place, I mean, you're winning, right? It's not just here's the cost. Good luck. So shall we move into that final trend? Let's do it. Outcomes, measurable outcomes. Now, some can say this is not a trend. You know, showing the ROI isn't a trend. It's something you should have been doing in the first place. But I think how we're thinking about event outcomes and ROI is changing. It's not just, you know, obviously not just did people show up, but why did it achieve our goals in the first place? Are those goals brand-driven goals? Are they relationship-building goals? And so that's the change. It's more, I think there's more of a flexibility around what is the proof, but are you measuring the proof point?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think if we kind of zoom out a little bit, there are so many ways to measure event success and quantify event success, because in theory, there are so many ways that you could decide to use events to fuel your business or your organizational priorities. And that could be, as you said, Felicia, maybe you are trying to increase brand awareness. Maybe you have a demand gen, you know, problem, or not a problem, but like you just have a big thing coming up next year, like a big product launch or some sort of like massive move that your organization is making. And so because there are so many ways you could use events, there's so many ways to measure success. I think the word that comes to mind for me is like just being intentional. And from the beginning, when you're planning, you know, just being clear, I feel like we said this over and over and over again, but it's so important, just being clear about like, what are the defined goals of, or, you know, goals for this event or event program, if you're doing more than just one event. And then tactically, are we set up to measure success in the ways that we want to? Because there can be a delta there. You know, sometimes you can say, I want to be able to measure and track the impact from this event across all of these different channels, which means all these different metrics or KPIs. And then your operations team or someone might say, hey, we can actually only track like these three things or, you know, half of the metrics that you want to track. And so I would say if that is where you are, right, like you might know exactly how you want to measure success, but maybe your organization isn't quite set up to measure everything possible. You could create like a little like roadmap for 2026 of like, okay, in the first half of the year, we're just going to measure these things. But at the same time, we're going to have a parallel process to try and kind of enhance the tracking mechanisms or the measurement mechanisms that we have in place. And then second half of the year, we're going to roll out this new measurement framework and hopefully a unified, especially if you're measuring revenue impact, right? Mm. A unified revenue kind of like metric measurement framework so that Rachel, I know we've talked about this before, like MQLs from events equals MQLs from any other marketing channel, like, right, we're defining them the same way. And so then we can like more accurately, you know, compare impact between channels. And then if we go into a specific channel like events, between programs, right? So I think you can't do any of that if you aren't intentional about it from the outset.
So just from my perspective, there's like this theme of imposter syndrome from the events side. And it's like, as channel owners, we need to freaking step into this power. We know that this channel is badass, right? Like we are, Splash did an Outlook report and it was like almost 90% of events generate a steady flow of revenue. Like own that shit. And we are still to this day trying to prove our value at big companies. And some CMOs get it, some CEOs don't get it, whatever it is. And it's like, so it's silly. It's like, if you can just put that metrics on a slide for your board and speak the same language as them, you are showing those measurable outcomes. And they're gonna be like, oh, duh, this is, of course, important. I would say most smart people at businesses understand that events drive business. But some planners, or let's not call them planners, let's call them leaders, event leaders or event strategists, don't know, they aren't upskilled, or they don't know how to speak that language, or they're not partnering with the right people. And so they're shouting from their corner of the universe saying, we're important, look at us, but they're not speaking the language of the entire org, or they haven't been properly trained on what EBITDA is, how to move pipeline down the funnel. We weren't trained or taught that. So it's a lot of on-the-job training. And if you ask somebody 10 years into the job, how are you influencing the business? Some of them get it, some of them don't. And they need to have that better partnership with their entire marketing team or start to learn themselves. I struggle with this too. I'll be honest, like I'm still like figuring out the right way to put that channel forward and say, this is why we're performing the way that we are. Yeah, we have an ROI dashboard that we're looking at. But I think what people are still struggling with is that storytelling behind the data. And then tying it to the measurable outcomes. So saying, okay, our goal was this. Maybe your goal is renewals. How many renewals did you get from that event? If you don't know and you're not tracking that, then you're not going to prove that measurable outcome from that event. So
I think that comparative view that I think Camille, you were just talking about it, and Rachel, like getting kind of that like language down is really, really important, because like putting my executive hat on, which I do not have, but we're going to pretend for a second it's an executive crown. We're going to say, could we have done this, put in air quotes, what is this without the event? And we're going to pull in all the buzzwords across these two trends. Could we have proven to the market that we are an authentic voice? Could we have told our story? Could we have physically shaken hands and proven that we speak the language of these individuals in this market. I'm looking at Felicia as I'm thinking about expanding into France or the DACH region in Europe, right? I think all of those things are like objectively what events can do, but then we also need to have the proof points that they do it, right? And that can be told through MQLs. It can be told through brand sentiment. It can be told through brand penetration. And all of those things require data around it. But I think like starting with that, like understanding how an executive thinks really helps you to not get so oftentimes we talk about defending our budget. Let's not get defensive. Let's be a strategic, leaned in business operator that justifies why our channel exists, sure, but also is willing to compromise and re-strategize, reinvest in areas where the impact is driving the business outcomes that are necessary, right? So really kind of getting that like selfish hat off, but showcasing and really showcasing. We know, this group knows that these are a shiny diamond, but an executive doesn't always, they have that very, very, very rational bean counter mindset. And we have to speak that language too. So you just wanted to call that out there.
I love that.
I love that mindset shift that you just articulated.
Yeah. And everything you said, kind of, I had questions for you and you all answered them. I was going to ask, are we speaking the same language as marketers and event organizers? You know, I think in Cvent, we are super lucky. The answer is pretty much yes. But that is because our executives, I think, at times have dragged us around the table and said, why are we doing this? What is it for? What is the outcome? And at times you can feel a bit like, well, why are you coming at me? There's such a clear, like you said, you know, you're defensive. There's such a clear and obvious answer to this. But it has made us all sharpen our tools and hone in how we speak and make sure that an MQL is an MQL, like you said. So, and even for me being regional, I can prove, because we're looking at our brand and our brand strategy, I can say, well, actually, we need to do this in Switzerland because they don't know who we are. You know, it's not like here's a lead and we sold 5 billion, you know, it's just we needed to do it for the brand, you know. So loving this, that we're all together, that we are all on one page. Loving that our audience has joined us through our trends, and our trends are now available to download. You can go through them yourselves. We're going to be doing lots of little mini trends as well. We're also going to be looking at what are not trends. And I know you're going to think that's really weird, but we intend to look at things that are not trends that just should be done. Things like sustainability and accessibility and diversity and all the D's, they're not trends. So look out for that as well, because they'll be coming to you soon. I'm not going to re-go over all the trends, but I'm just going to say there's a lot of human connection in amongst a sea of AI. There's a lot of looking after your costs, making sure you are providing experiences and proving the point at the end of it all. So I've summarized our 9 trends into about 5 points, but if you want to go back and listen to part 1, please do that. And if not, have a great day.
Thanks for hanging out with us on Great Events, a podcast by Cvent. If you've been enjoying our podcast, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.
And you can help fellow event professionals and marketers just like you discover great events by leaving us a rating on Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform.
Stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, updates, and some extra doses of inspiration.
Got a great story or an event to share? We want to hear from you. Find us on LinkedIn, send us a DM, or drop us a note at greatevents@cvent.com.
Big thanks to our amazing listeners, our guest speakers, and the incredible team behind the scenes. Remember, every great event begins with great people.
And that's a wrap. Keep creating, keep innovating, and keep joining us as we redefine how to make events great.